Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Following up on a state news story we heard yesterday at this time, the story by our reporter Mike Simonson in Superior. He told us about how the murder of a Superior woman has mobilized the community to push for legislation that would alert people if a convicted violent felon had moved into a certain neighborhood. Should neighborhoods be notified, as they are when a sex offender moves to town, when a violent, perhaps a repeatedly violent criminal, moves to a certain community? 1-800-642-1234. We'll talk with two guests during this hour who are advocating for this. 1-800-642-1234. Does it make sense to you? What questions do you have? If you're in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We will start out our discussion this morning speaking with a close friend of the Superior woman who was murdered by a neighbor who had a violent criminal record about a year ago. We'll talk about why she is involved in this effort to pass this law, and we'll find out what the community is hoping for and why. And then after 6:30, we'll talk with State Representative Scott Souter from Abbotsford, who plans to introduce the legislation. And as always, we will welcome your questions and your comments about this idea for our guests. We start with Melinda Cooper, a friend of Leah Gustafson. She is the organizer of the group that is advocating for Leah's law. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about Leah.
Leah was she's a really wonderful, beautiful person inside and out. I've known her since she was about 5 years old. She's been a real big part of my life. She was someone I could rely on and trust in any given time. We spent a lot of time together doing various activities together, talking till the sun came up.
Yeah.
Just an all-around wonderful, terrific person.
And what happened? What were the circumstances of her murder?
I talked to her roughly about 6 hours before it happened, and, you know, her last words to me was, "I love you, and I'll see you on Sunday." The very next day, I get a phone call from Sharon, Leah's mother, and the words that echo in my head and probably will for the rest of my life is, "Melinda, Leah's gone." And at first, I had no idea what she meant. I'm like, "What do you mean Leah's gone?" And the rest is a complete blur.
Yeah. She was, as far as you know, murdered by a man who lived across the street from her?
Yes, Jason Borelli.
Yeah, and what happened?
I'm not sure exactly what happened. They said that she had opened her door to him. He had been ringing her doorbell, and she opened the door, and he proceeded to very violently and brutally murder her.
Yeah, and so, I mean, she simply opened the door to somebody who was ringing her doorbell.
Exactly.
She, as far as you would believe, she recognized this person as a neighbor who lived across the street.
Yeah, she had met him on two occasions that I'm aware of, yes.
Yeah. He had a violent criminal record?
He had a very long criminal record.
Yeah. Well, I guess, why do you think it would have made any difference if Leah somehow and the neighbors in that neighborhood somehow knew of this man's criminal record?
For one, she would have never in a million years opened that door to him. And I think she would have made steps to get out of the neighborhood even quicker than she was.
Yeah. Do you know how long he had lived there?
I'm unaware of that. I'm not sure, no.
Yeah. So what this murder happened a year ago, then what prompted you to organize this group and push for this effort to get this law?
I had heard through the grapevine that a friend of, and coworker of hers, Mary, had started organizing this and needed some assistance. And as soon as I heard about it, I just kind of jumped on and said, "Let's take this and go." Mm-hmm. And we've been running with it ever since, talking to whoever will speak with us and trying to make people aware that, you know, enough is enough. We need to do something.
Yeah, and apparently in his State of the City address this month, the Superior Mayor, Dave Ross, talked about this.
Yes, correct. That is correct, yes.
And he's a supporter of it, and now you have Scott Suter in the State Assembly also signed on to it.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah. We're going to check our weather forecast, and then we'll continue talking about this proposed law, dubbed Leah's Law, named after Leah Gustafson, a superior woman who was murdered by a neighbor who had a violent criminal record. Her friends and neighbors and other supporters in the community are pushing for legislation that would notify people if a violent felon moves into their neighborhood. Our guest is Melinda Cooper. She was a friend of Leah's and one of the organizers of the group that is working for Leah's Law. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea? What questions do you have? In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We're talking about an effort in Superior to get a new law passed in Wisconsin. The proposed law is called Leah's Law, named after a Superior woman who was murdered by a neighbor who had a criminal record, a very lengthy criminal record. This group is trying to get this legislation passed that would notify neighbors if a violent felon moves into the neighborhood. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. We're talking with Melinda Cooper, a friend of Leah Gustafson. She's organizer of the group that's advocating for Leah's Law. Victor in Milwaukee is online. Hi, Victor.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Ms. Cooper.
Good morning.
I sympathize with your loss. I can understand how horrible it is, and I can feel if I lost a good buddy that way, I would feel really bad. And I support you pushing this legislation because, you know, I'm from Milwaukee. That's one of the most urbanized areas in Wisconsin, and I can dare say the problem is 20-fold here. So I will be in support of it. But my question to you is this. You know, I try to look at it from another angle. What if this individual, everybody finds out who he is and what he's all about and what his rap sheet is? My question is, all right, he may get rejected housing or nobody wants him in the neighborhood. My question is, where would you put an individual like that? Would you put him in a colony? Would you put him in some special housing for an ex-con? Because the problem isn't going to go away. It's just going to transfer from one neighborhood to another. So what are your feelings about that?
Yeah, good question, Victor.
Yeah, we're currently talking closely with the mayor, our Mayor Ross, on that, on exactly what we would do with these people. And we haven't really come up with a clear picture of that one yet.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Melinda, if maybe somebody does have a violent criminal record, but there are those who would say, well, the person has served his or her time and paid his or her debt to society and now should be able to start with a clean slate and not go around with this stigma that's going to haunt them for the rest of their lives. What would you say about that?
Well, currently we're asking, after they're released, we're not asking for them to permanently have to register. We're asking for, like, about a 10-year registry. We're going to leave that up to the politicians and legislators to decide the exact length of that time that they would have to register.
Yeah. So tell me what you have in mind. What is your hope? You know, you're going to leave the details up to the politicians, but what the felon is released from prison and then they have to sign up on some registration type of a thing, and then what?
Our hope is that it'll give us the opportunity to be aware of who is in our neighborhood and take precautions to protect ourselves, our loved ones, and our children.
Yeah, and you want somehow the state of Wisconsin to call a specific community, like call your mayor, if a felon is going to be moving to Superior into the XYZ neighborhood.
That is correct, yes.
And then you would want, for instance, somehow the state or the mayor or the city would then, what, leaflet the community or somehow notify the neighborhood that this particular person's moving in?
Yeah, we would like them to have to register via the internet and also like some mailings to be sent out to the neighborhood.
Yeah, and you don't have any qualms that this is going to somehow be unfair to a felon?
No, I don't. As far as I'm concerned, once they convict a crime, especially on several counts, it's time that we start saying enough is enough and take measures to protect ourselves. We have the right to be protected as citizens.
Yeah. You're also trying to get this not only in Wisconsin, but you want Minnesota involved in this. How would that work?
We're working slowly with Minnesota right now. We've been focusing on Wisconsin because it's moving a little faster, but we would like to, our eventual goal is to see this nationwide. But yeah, we've been working with Minnesota politicians also on this.
Yeah. Let me remind listeners that we are talking with Melinda Cooper, an organizer of a group called Leah's Law. It's advocating for this new law that would notify neighbors if a violent felon moves into their neighborhood. What do you think of this idea? Would you want to be notified if a violent felon is going to be moving into your neighborhood? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Would this prevent crime? Could this have prevented the murder of Leah Gustafson, a Superior woman who was murdered by a neighbor who lived across the street about a year ago? The person had a lengthy criminal record. That Jason Borelli has been sentenced now to life in prison. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. Victor brought up another point that comes to mind. He said the problem is 20-fold in Milwaukee, he suspects, from what you might have in Superior. Isn't this going to just be so unwieldy? You know, there are so many convicted felons that are moving around Wisconsin or around the country or coming from another state. Or, you know, wouldn't it be almost impossible to be notifying neighbors if somebody with a criminal record moves into town?
No, I don't feel that would be impossible. I think it's very doable. We're hoping that our goal is to have it linked on with the current sex offender law and website as a cost-effective measure.
Yeah, you figure that that this is done when a sex offender moves to town. It should be done if another violent criminal
Most
moves
definitely.
To town. Yeah.
Yes.
Are you looking just what types of crimes would you expect? I mean, any prisoner, anybody who served time, or what kind of felon are you most concerned about? Somebody who's been a repeat offender, or
repeat offenders, those that have been convicted of attempts to take a life, who have taken a life. Any kind of assault with an intent to kill, first degree manslaughter, first and second degree murder. And any attempt to commit any of these crimes, we'd like to see those on this data.
Basically. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Amy in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I was just wondering, I would think that mandatory counseling or some type of rehabilitation classes would be much more effective in the long run. And I understand you're trying to make the neighborhood safer, but it just seems like a short-term solution to me. You're just putting them not by you, you know.
Any thoughts on that, Melinda?
We've been speaking with closely with Mayor Ross and Representative Frank Boyle concerning that matter. And there's a slim chance that some can be rehabilitated, but not all. And that's what we're concerned about, is the ones that are repetitive violent criminals and have had opportunities to be rehabilitated, and it has not worked for them.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much, Amy, for the call. We had a caller who was, wanted to be anonymous, but said that he was convicted of a felony in 1980. He faced 65 years in prison, got out, now doesn't do any alcohol or drugs. He has been clean ever since and would not want anyone to know who he is. He's just a regular guy now, has a family with two kids. And the system worked for him. That's his bottom line. And if something like this passed, he feels that it would, destroy his life. Melinda, what do you think?
I don't really feel that way. When you commit a crime, I guess what I'd have to do is kind of turn the tables and say, what if this had been his close friend, daughter, child? I mean, how would he feel about it then? I mean, would he want to know if a repetitive violent criminal moved into his neighborhood?
Yeah. Well, what are you in our remaining moments with you, Melinda? What are your plans for the near future to try to get this law passed?
We've been asked to attend Superior Days in Madison, Wisconsin, in the end of February, which we will be attending. Excuse me, and we'll be speaking with legislators there concerning this matter.
Yeah, and what are you going to say to the legislators that you talk to?
Well, I think it's past due time to get this law into effect. I feel that we have a right as citizens to be protected. We have a right to know if a violent criminal was to move into our neighborhood. I mean, I most definitely want to know. I mean, I have children. I want to know, and I want to be able to take measures to protect my family.
Yeah. What would you do if you were notified that a felon was going to be moving into your neighborhood?
I would take steps to better protect my children, my family.
Yeah. Like what? I'm just trying to figure out what you would do.
Well, I'd probably put up, some lights around my house, which I'm already currently planning to do, some motion detector lights, and I would also be aware of where that person lived and be able to make sure that my children stayed within my eyesight, which I currently do already. And to be honest, I'd probably want to research and maybe possibly move to a safer neighborhood if I was to be in a neighborhood like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for being with us. Very sorry for your loss, and thank you for joining us and talking about your efforts to pass Leah's law.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Melinda Cooper, a friend of Leah Gustafson, who was murdered by one of her neighbors, a man with a lengthy criminal record who lived across the street from her, knocked on her door. She answered it. He said he needed some assistance, and he proceeded to beat her and stab her, murder her. Leah's friends, families, other community members are advocating that the state legislature pass a bill that would make it easier to track convicted violent felons and would notify neighbors should a convicted felon move to a neighborhood. We'll talk with the state legislator about this after the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's now about 6:36 on this Wednesday, January the 17th. And we'll continue talking in this half hour about the proposed Leah's Law, named after a superior woman who was murdered last year by a neighbor who had a violent criminal record. People in the Superior area are pushing for legislation that calls for notifying people if a violent felon, a repeat offender, or anyone convicted of a violent crime moves into a neighborhood. The idea has a supporter in the state assembly, and we will talk with State Representative Scott Souter about what sort of legislation he has planned and welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Would you support this type of legislation? Does it make sense to you that Wisconsin would notify a community if a violent offender would be moving to town? Wisconsin already has a law on the books to notify neighbors when a violent sexual offender moves to town. Why not anyone as a violent felon? That's what many in Superior would like to see following the murder of Leah Gustafson, believing that this would make community safer and people could make plans safety plans if they were notified if a violent offender moved into their neighborhood. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Let us welcome Scott Suter, a Republican state representative from Abbotsford, lead author of Leah's Law. He is also co-chair of the Special Committee on the Placement of Sex Offenders, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We talked with a close friend of Leah's in our first half hour, Melinda Cooper, who wanted something good to have come out of this horrible example of Leah's murder. Do you really think that a law like this could prevent a murder like that?
Well, I'm not, you know, going to go out there and say this is going to prevent certain crimes, and I really don't know if it would have prevented this crime. I think it would have helped, but no one can say, you know, that a law of this type would, you know, have prevented such a heinous event. However, I do think that allowing individuals in a community to know whether or not there is a violent offender in their neighborhood, I think people's awareness would assist with the way that they take action for their families, the way that they protect their families and protect their communities. So I think community notification, certainly when it comes to sex offenders coming in a community, is important. And I think if you're talking about violent felons, and we're not talking about every felon, we're certainly not going to go that far. But when you're talking about violent felons, people who have committed kidnapping, arson, you know, major battery, taking hostages, terrorism, things of that nature, I do think communities deserve to know if an individual who has committed that crime or has committed repeat crimes of that nature is living near them. I know that some will argue that is infringing on the rights of someone who has served their time. But I think, you know, the other side of the coin is you have to take a look at the community and the community's right to be aware of the nature of those crimes. And again, we're talking about violent felons. We're certainly not talking about all felonies. So I think it will help, and I think community awareness is a very good thing when it comes to protecting you, your family, and your neighbors.
Yeah, how would this work? What is your legislation calling for?
Well, it is a work in progress, and I want to state that up front. We are, I think, going through our fifth draft right now. We're working closely with Representative Frank Boyle. This is going to be a bipartisan approach. This is the only way we can do this and will do this. It right now, the basic tenets of our legislation is this: we're defining what certain violent felonies are. We're going to force violent offenders to register. They're going to be part of a registry. There's going to be a website, hopefully linked with the sex offender website, not to be confused with the sex offender website, but linked with it, so people will know whether or not there is a violent or violent repeat offender in their community. Now, we may set it up in terms of community notification, the same type of process we have for sex offenders. It is not automatic community blanket notification where everyone in the community is notified automatically. That's not the way it's set up currently. I think we'll have a staged process that makes sense and certainly include law enforcement and let law enforcement make many of those decisions like they do with the sex offender registry and a sex offender notification law. But I do think a registry is important so people can find out if there are violent felons living near them or moving into their community. And certainly if a violent offender is moving from another state, I think there should be even more community notification so people know the nature of that crime and where they're moving. So, like I said, it's a work in progress. The real key component of this is defining what serious violent offenses will be included. We certainly don't you know, want to include minor drug crimes or crimes that are not violent in nature. And so that really is a key component that we're working hard to make sure we have it right. We simply don't want to go forward with something that, you know, may sound good in a press release, but doesn't really work in terms of practical application of the law.
Mm-hmm. And when you mentioned this, I guess I didn't realize this, with the sex offenders moving to a community, it's generally law enforcement that is notified and not necessarily a letter to every neighbor in a particular neighborhood?
No, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. What happens is a core team is set up, and that core team, made up of community residents, law enforcement, and individuals from either the Department of Health and Family Services or the Department of Corrections, whoever has jurisdictional authority over that individual, they essentially, working with law enforcement, decide whether that violent sex offender or sex offender is a level 1, level 2, or level 3. Level 3 is automatic notification. Level 2 is somewhere in between and level 1. Mm-hmm. Law enforcement gets to decide who is notified and when. I would argue, from my standpoint, that whenever a sex offender comes into community, I think the community certainly should be notified. But right now, currently, we leave a lot of those decisions up to law enforcement and the core team, and that we're taking a look at that in another committee. But I think we're going to have to match up Leah's law with the way that we handle sex offenders in this state. I'm not equating the two. I'm simply saying the way we do it, I think it makes sense to have certain stages, and so there's not confusion, especially when it comes to notification. I think we absolutely have to include law enforcement in that decision-making process.
Yeah, would a violent felon have to remain registered for the rest of his life?
No. The way we currently have it set up, and again, this is a work in progress, we have a long way to go to make this law in Wisconsin, but what we currently have it set up in our current draft is that a violent offender would have to register for 15 years after the date on which he or she is discharged from his or her sentence or commitment. If, however, this individual has committed two or more occasions of violent offense, they would have to register for life. So it's kind of a two strikes, you're out, and you're on the registry for life if you've committed more than one of similar offenses that are considered violent in nature. But 15 years is a standard we're using if you've committed one offense. If you've committed more than one offense, it would be for a lifetime. Now, again, we're not married to those specific dates, but that seems to be the general bellwether that we're going off of right now, and we're going to see what other states are doing as well. And we want, there's a lot of research yet to be done. I don't want people to think that, you know, there's been a lot of work put into this, and I give a lot of credit to Melinda Cooper and her group for really making this an issue. And a lot of us think that this is a good idea that can help with community notification. And we're going to work with Minnesota legislators, and again with myself, Representative Boyle, and many others to do this right.
Yeah, and there would be a website linked to the current sex offenders website, so even if you don't necessarily have the entire community somehow being notified, people can go to a website just to see if maybe one of their neighbors is a convicted sex offender now and perhaps a violent felon later.
Well, I think that makes the most sense in terms of not only from a cost standpoint, but from one place where people can go to find out if there is an individual who has committed serious offenses, be it sex offenses or violent felonies. We have to find a way to separate the two so that people don't get the two confused, because they're not the same. However, I do think it makes sense for people to be able to go to one site where they can clearly define what this person did, the nature of the crime, where they live, and other relevant information so that communities can protect themselves or at least know who is living near them and has committed very, very serious offenses.
Yeah. We had a couple of callers already who wanted to know what that website is. Do you have that offhand?
No, we don't. Oh, the sex offender website,
yes.
You can go to the Department of Corrections website, and the link is right there. Yes. I don't have it offhand for you, but go to the Department of Corrections website off of State of Wisconsin page, and that is a good source. There are many other sources, and you can call your legislator's office. There's other sources on the both the state and federal level, both private and public, that people can go to. And if they want to call my office, we can certainly get them a list of those sources.
And we'll maybe have Karen look up one of those sources, and I'll share that after our weather break. 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890 if you have a question about Leah's Law, proposed legislation that is being drafted by our guest, Scott Suter, a Republican state representative from Abbotsford who is co-chair of the Special Committee on the Placement of Sex Offenders. This law would be similar, different but similar, to the notification, community notification when a sex offender moves to a town, that when a violent felon, convicted felon, moves to town, a similar process. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, and you can find that website for sex offenders at www.wi-doc.com. That's the Department of Corrections website, and there's a link there. We are talking with Scott Suter. He is a state representative from Abbotsford. He is lead author of Leah's Law. Leah's Law, named after Leah Gustafson, who was murdered in the Superior area about a year ago by her neighbor, who had a violent criminal record. And now friends and community members are pushing for this community notification, wanting a community to be notified if a violent felon is going to be moving into town. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Jay in Wausau is with us. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Representative Suter.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, judging from the comments of Ms. Cooper earlier, the sort of intended goal here seems to be to allow neighborhoods to have an idea of when a violent offender is coming to their neighborhood in order that they can, you know, as she expressed it, you know, her friend wouldn't have opened the door to this fellow. And it seems like the goal here is to sort of shun and isolate former convicts. And I just wonder if, from the point of rehabilitation and preventing recidivism, maybe isolating these people and giving them little contact with the communities that they find themselves living in now is maybe a counterproductive measure, and you're just encouraging them to sort of live in the underworld, live in the shadows. I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Well, I do appreciate the question. And first of all, what happened to Leah was not that she simply ran into the person. The person, as I understand, entered her apartment. So she wouldn't have opened her apartment door, opened her basically her life to this individual, had she known his very violent history and a very, very long rap sheet. So, and again, I'm not arguing that the crime would have been prevented. However, I do think had Leah known that, she certainly wouldn't have opened the door to this individual taking her life. And again, we're not talking about all felonies. We're talking about very, very violent offenses. And those offenses, are of such a serious nature that we should allow at least the victims and certainly some community residents, depending upon what law enforcement and the core team decides in terms of the nature of the crime. I do think the community has a right to know if those types of individuals are living near them, particularly if they have families and young children. Now, I'm not saying that these individuals haven't served their time and don't deserve to live in the community. I'm simply saying that because of the violent nature of these crimes, particularly repeat crimes, they should at least have to register, and communities have a right to know what they did, the nature of their crime, and where they live. And I know it's a delicate balance, but I do think you have to weigh a little bit in favor of the community's right to know when it comes to serious violent felonies. And I know, you know, it you raise a very good point, and you're certainly going to have individuals that are sometimes shunned. However, I'd rather allow for that than have a community completely kept in the dark and have another crime like this occur when it might have been prevented.
Thank you, Jay. I'm going to go next to Jesse in Richland Center. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a quick comment and then a quick question. The comment is, yeah, I would support a law like this because sometimes real rehabilitation doesn't work for people who have a lack of self-control for some reason or some lack of common sense or socialness or something. But the question is there a provision in this written into this law to prevent basically what the WASA caller was asking about, which is scapegoating and ostracization of somebody who the correction system did work for, but because of the nature of their crime and their past that they sort of get nailed to the wall anytime something happens in the community. I mean, yeah, you really should notify people when something like this is something bad like this is in someone's past and they moved into your community, but how do you prevent somebody, you know, someone's civil rights being violated when they have, you know, reformed?
Well, again, that's a very good question. I do think we have laws in the books that take care of that situation for individuals who have been convicted. We have laws in the books that, although I disagree with the way they're written, they're on the books to prevent employment discrimination for felons. It's very, very difficult, I would argue, to not hire a felon in this state unless there is a substantial relationship between the nature of their crime and the type of employment that they have. And I would argue that the laws are in place to prevent that type of activity, be it employment discrimination or, you know, shutting the door to someone to go into a restaurant or even to come into a community. We're not saying they can't come into the community. We're certainly not saying that this. We want to open the door to any type of discriminatory activity because of the nature of the crime they committed. But I do think people have a right to know if they've committed that serious of an offense. And, you know, people cannot, we're not saying people can become vigilantes or, you know, do anything to them that would, you know, not allow them to live their lives. But the fact is they did commit the crime. And because of the seriousness of the crimes that we're talking about, I still argue that the community, certain members of the community, certainly the victims, certainly law enforcement has a right to have that information available so that people know who's living next door. Yes, it's a very delicate balance, but I think if you're a community resident, my opinion is that you have a right to know if an individual has committed a serious violent offense or what's currently on the books, a sexual offense. And look, it's an imperfect system, but the fact is they committed the crime, and I do think that that requires us to have a system in place where communities know who is released in their communities, who is coming to their communities, and what type of crime they committed, if it is a serious violent offense.
And again, the list of violent crimes, you're still drafting the bill, but it's stuff like aggravated battery and kidnapping, some major violent felony.
Yeah, Joy, I would say, you know, things like homicide, certain types of very serious batteries, mayhem, you know, taking hostages, kidnapping, even carjacking with a dangerous weapon, arson, things that have items, violent felonies that have, you know, either taken a life or placed lives in danger, and certainly those types of repeat offenses should be on the registry.
Yeah, Chris in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
I've been listening for an hour. Nobody's talking about rehabilitation. They don't want to put any funding into making things better. But when you do what you do, what you are going to do is not only ostracize the people so they feel alienated, but you're going to get them out of those small towns, and they're going to have to go to some place where they are anonymous, and that's going to be the big city, and the big city is Milwaukee. And what you're doing is not only do you have all the poor located in Milwaukee, all the minorities located in Milwaukee, you're going to get all the ex-felons located in Milwaukee, then they're just going to put a big fence around the place. I'm just so angry about this. Why don't you spend your time and your energy on rehabilitation?
Well, are you trying to push all the felons into Milwaukee too, Scott Suter?
No, that's certainly not what we're trying to do. And we're not talking about placement here in our bill. We're not saying that these violent offenders can or cannot go to certain communities. We're simply saying when that individual goes to a community, whether they come from in the state of Wisconsin or outside the state of Wisconsin, that community should be aware of what they've done if it is violent in nature. The other thing is I fully support rehabilitation. I think we should do whatever we can to help those individuals while they're incarcerated and possibly help them while they're out.
Well, I'm sorry, we've run out of time. Mm-hmm. Scott Suter, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Joy.
Scott Suter, Republican State Representative from Abbotsford. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.